Paul from AMS with us. So your location?
Right near the corner of PD and Verona Road on the southwest side of Madison. You can call us at 608-274-7400, amsmadison.com, or you can even like us on Facebook.
Sounds great. Paul from AMS.
And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, Peter Rickman, who's with the Alliance for...
Good jobs.
Good jobs. Good jobs. Good jobs. Good jobs are hard to come by. Jobs are easy. Matter of fact, there's a lot of employers having a tough time filling low-wage jobs, but good jobs are hard to come by. And now the governor is dangling something in front of the taxpayers that is extremely controversial. You're active in making sure that Foxconn pays its workers and treats them right.
Yeah, and first of all, thanks for having me on, Sly. It's great to be on the podcast here. And I want to say, you know, from the outset, one of the reasons I think people see Foxconn and this $3 billion subsidy, one of the top five largest in the history of this country when it comes to corporate subsidy deals, one reason people see it as so controversial is that this is just the latest data point in a pretty clear, bright, and thick line of the way Scott Walker has moved governance in this state to build a low-wage economy. And whether it's failing to raise the minimum wage and then getting rid of the ability of the governor to use his or her authority to do so on their own, or busting unions in dramatic fashion, or using the corporate subsidy slush fund, otherwise known as WEDIC, to grow low-wage employment, this is just part of a pattern and practice that low-wage Walker has deployed to create a low-wage economy for working people in our state. He's got no credibility when it comes to talk about good jobs. He's got no credibility when it comes to talking about building an economy that works for all of us. And so, you know, I think that's one reason people look at this with a little bit of side eye and say, really? We're going to talk about $3 billion to subsidize a multinational corporation to come here without any sort of accountability for good job standards? Come on, give us a break. Let's talk about what it's going to take to make real good jobs come out of this deal.
And yet, when this came out of the gate, it looked like it was just too good to be true. Suddenly, Wisconsin was going to be the Silicon Valley of the upper Midwest and, 13,000 jobs. And it was going to spur other suppliers. It was going to do a number of things, but... Now that we've begun to peek under some of the details, it's somewhat more dubious.
Yeah, and I want to say, Sly, that what we're working on through this coalition, a coalition of labor and community organizations, is a set of standards that would apply to not only the direct employees of Foxconn, but also to the employers of suppliers and service contractors. If our state taxpayers are going to put up $3 billion for this deal, we need to ensure that from the production line to the food service at the plant to those suppliers that and the secondary markets that are supposed to be part of this, it's going to result in good jobs. I think that's part of what hasn't really been paid attention to much here is a lot of the glitz and hype about, oh my gosh, we're going to bring Foxconn, this international manufacturing corporation, to Wisconsin, and it's going to create all these secondary and tertiary markets, and oh my gosh, there's going to be a new manufacturing revival in Wisconsin. No one has really paid all that much attention, although they're starting to now, to the finer points. Things like, are these going to be good manufacturing jobs, or are they going to be more of the low-wage sweatshop-type manufacturing jobs that not only is characteristic of Foxconn, but has started to lead to more manufacturing employment in the United States as compared to where we've been. I think your listeners know, probably as well as any, that there once was a time when we built the world's first middle class on good union manufacturing jobs. And unfortunately, those have been decimated by a whole host of factors. And when people look at this deal, I think on the surface level, they see, oh, there might be some manufacturing jobs coming back here to Wisconsin. Hey, our state's lost more of its middle class than any other in the country. This might be part of our pathway out. And you peel back the layers, and oh, who do you see peeking out at you? Not just Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald. It's low-wage Walker and his approach to building a low-wage Wisconsin economy.
Well, let's peel this layer back, because this is a Taiwanese company that actually has a different name. Foxconn's sort of their nickname. But They have a terrible reputation on the environment, but an even worse reputation for treating their workers very poorly in China. And I was on a conservative show, and I actually had a Republican say, you know, if you look at the suicide rate of Foxconn employees, it's actually lower than the average of the suicide rate at other companies in China. And I went, well, there you go. There
when
you go.
When conservatives are arguing for things based upon suicide rates, you know that that movement has gone into intellectual bankruptcy. Thanks, Trump.
So why do you think Foxconn is even going to be building a factory in America if they do it all?
I think that's a pretty interesting question. I got to say, some of this is going to, it's got to relate to not only who's in the White House and who his allies are, Donald Trump and his close gubernatorial ally, Scott Walker, but also Paul Ryan, in whose district this plant would be. I mean, it just looks to me like more the kind of crony capitalism that characterizes modern conservatism. You know, a lot of people like to talk about, oh, conservatism wants limited government, free markets, baloney. What the modern conservative wants, whether it's this pseudo-populist like Donald Trump or uber-establishment Ayn Rand slavish devotee like Paul Ryan, they want to use government. They want to use state power to enrich corporate interests. And that's the nature of this deal. So if you're Donald Trump, you're an ultimate loyalty guy. And you look at who's carrying water for you. No matter what happens in the D.C. press and the chattering classes, he knows who his real allies are. It's the people like Scott Walker and Paul Ryan. And so he's rewarding them by saying, hey, if the federal government is going to be involved in using its power to subsidize the corporate profits of an entity like Foxconn or its actual corporate entity, Hanhai, I'm going to make sure it goes into a place that's amongst my closest allies. Those guys delivered Wisconsin for me, and so I'm going to put it there and right in Paul Ryan's backyard in the Kenosha-Racine corridor. So I think that has a lot to do with this. Secondarily, you know, they want to exploit the waters of Lake Michigan. The Great Lakes are the largest freshwater source in the world, and the kind of production that they're talking about requires that source of fresh water. Make no mistake about it, it has nothing to do with Scott Walker's purported claims of, you know, passing right to work and having this manufacturing and agriculture tax credit. This has everything to do with factors that, you know, frankly, don't appeal to most people in Wisconsin. We don't want to have our water stolen from us. We don't want to continue to build a low-wage economy that can't rebuild our middle class. And we're certainly not interested in putting taxpayer dollars into subsidizing corporate profits at our own expense when it comes to wages and benefits and decent working conditions.
Let me ask you this. And of course, a lot of people have made mention the fact that this is just over the border from Illinois. So Wisconsin could actually be subsidizing jobs that go to Illinois workers, which, hey, to me, a worker is a worker. If somebody can
absolutely
be gainfully employed, I don't care if they're in Illinois mm-hmm. or Wisconsin. But when you're talking about this sort of money, the payback, they're now saying 2043?
Yeah, and that's using the rosiest projections. By the way, I'm glad that some have paid attention to this payback scenario where the earliest it could come is in 2043 if a bunch of assumptions hold up and play out. And by the way, those are assumptions and rooted in self-reporting by Foxconn and the firm that collaborated in the study, Ernst & Young. Let's bear in mind that these folks have a vested interest in the rosiest of assumptions being put forward. I don't know about you, but when I was going through school and doing math classes, I couldn't just put an answer down. I had to show my work. And the fiscal analysis here couldn't show the work necessary because they were relying upon background from Foxconn and Ernst & Young when it came to the number of jobs, the types of occupations, the wages and benefits to be paid out. So let's just say that 2043 is a best case scenario. That's pretty shaky. You know, this is something where I think taxpayers in Wisconsin, workers in Wisconsin, we have to look at this and say, I don't know if the people of Illinois are going to benefit from this. And fine, working people in Illinois should have a decent economy too. It's not like Bruce Rauner's doing them any favors. He's sort of like what Scott Walker would love to be. Thankfully, they have a Democratic legislature standing in his way. You know, I think the people of Illinois, the working folks of Illinois, ought to do well. I think the working people of Wisconsin desperately need to do better. But if they're going to benefit from this, they should have some skin in the game too. And I would say this, Sly, let me go a step further here.
Uh-huh.
If the people of Wisconsin are going to be investing substantially in the capital and labor for this, that $3 billion subsidy breaks down into about 50-50 subsidies for capital investment and labor, why don't we get a stake in the company? Why don't we actually get to benefit from this? If this is such a great deal, why doesn't Foxconn cut us in on some of the ownership and the profits that come out of it and guarantee that we're going to have good family-supporting union jobs at this facility? So it's not just about Illinois workers and their government benefiting at our expense. It's about the only ones who benefit from this are Foxconn and their corporate profits and the political fortunes of Scott Walker and other Trump allies.
Let me ask you something.
Workers in this state and taxpayers, we lose unless this deal gets changed.
Let me ask you something, and we'll talk about the amendments that are being offered to change it. You at one time worked for Epic, which has been an immensely successful software company in Wisconsin. How much money did Judy Faulkner ask for from the government to build in Wisconsin?
Gosh, please don't quote me on this, but I don't think they got a dime from the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Just to be fair, I mean, there was investment in certain aspects of the success of a company like Epic, just like there's investments that play out in the success of a lot of companies. You know, they used a tax incremental financing district in Verona to help build that new campus.
But we're not talking $3 billion here.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And I think this goes to my point here. Government has a role to play in building the economy. Absolutely. But I don't think taxpayers and workers in our state are interested in government playing the role of subsidizing corporate profits at the expense of everybody else. That's not how this thing is supposed to work. It's just another example of the rigged system that people like Walker, on behalf of the boss class, has been building in our state. And that's why working people have been losing. That's why folks don't want to see this thing go forward the way that it is, because they know that there's a different way. There's a different way for companies to be successful while workers thrive too. But that's what we've got to do, is put working people first in Wisconsin instead of putting working people last like low-wage Walker has done. And instead of putting corporate interests first, we need to look at what's going to build the economy for working class people from Abbotsford and Ashland all the way down to Racine and Kenosha.
Is that why you call yourself the Alliance for Good Jobs?
Well, we call ourselves the Alliance for Good Jobs because we're focused pretty intently on winning good jobs. And frankly, the Alliance for Good Union Jobs just doesn't have, you know, the same sort of rhythm to it as the Alliance for Good Jobs. But we absolutely believe in having living wage, family-supporting jobs with union representation, because working people need to have power to bargain up and uphold standards. And we're an Alliance of Labor and Community Organizations, so the name was sort of easy. It's kind of one of those hit you over the head names.
Well,
what are they for? They're for good jobs. What are they? It's an alliance.
I love it. Here's my question for you. I've seen your posts on Facebook. You talk about the fact that there's a lot of things that aren't put in writing in this legislation. I've heard a couple of people mention that the legislature is not going to actually see the contract before they vote on it. Can you clarify this, Jeff?
I don't know if you need any more clarity than that, Sly. It's baloney is what it is. If you want me to just say it out loud.
Well, we lost our baloney manufacturer here in Madison, thanks to Warren Buffett.
Oscar Mayer, man, yeah, rest in peace. Yeah, well, I think we know where all that baloney went. It's into this bill and most of the other things that this Republican legislature and governor have done over the last 6.5 years. You know, it's sort of ironic that we're talking about, there's going to be all these good jobs when, you know, they made these same promises with everything that they've done, whether it's taken away a minimum wage law that actually would have prioritized workers or busted our unions. Said, oh, you know, if we get rid of things that actually build living wages and family-supporting jobs, we'll end up with more living wages and family-supporting jobs. You know, the truth of this, Sly, is that they can't make this stuff up, so they just put it in legislation. It's so ridiculous that they're going to say, and they, I mean, Walker and Foxconn and the Republican leaders who are pushing this, that if we just trust them, they're going to deliver on good jobs. I don't know about you, and I'll say this, Sly. I'm an unrepentant class warrior. I really believe in fighting for working class people, no matter what. Winning unions, raising wages, that's what I'm for. But I also know enough about business to know that you don't do something without putting it in writing. And whether it's a union contract negotiator, bargaining, a collective bargaining agreement, or a corporate executive bargaining a deal with a business partner, you put things in writing. Right now, the Foxconn authorizing legislation has nothing in it about setting wage standards and ensuring that the rights of workers are protected. There's nothing from Foxconn as far as a private agreement, the likes of which we worked toward winning on the Bucks Arena deal. A pretty good example of how when public investment is involved, there should be decent, good jobs that result, and it has to be guaranteed. Let me say this, Lyle. I don't think any of your listeners have ever said to their mortgage servicing company or their landlord, hey, I'm going to pay it. Don't worry about it. It's cool. I got this. No one's ever said to their student loan borrower, hey, it's all right. Trust me. I'm going to have all the money to pay this off. Don't even worry about it. The truth is, vague promises and bold assertions about good family supporting jobs ain't going to pay the rent. It's not going to pay student loan debt. Sure as hell ain't going to cover the grocery bill. What we need, the only thing that will actually take care of the working people in Southeast Wisconsin and across the state, is a guarantee. And that means putting something in writing in this bill or an agreement, a binding agreement to hold Foxconn accountable to all these claims about good family supporting jobs. It's pretty simple. If you don't put it in writing, it ain't happening.
We'll talk more with Peter Rickman next. He's with the Alliance for Good Jobs here at SlysOffice.com.
Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores, brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together.
We're back with Peter Rickman at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and many great local sponsors. He's with the Alliance for Good Jobs. Peter obviously has been a worker activist here in Wisconsin from the day he was born in Neenah, Wisconsin. Right?
Well, I don't know about the day I was born. I mean, I certainly was a troublemaker when I was a kid. Don't ask my mom.
Your mother was in labor, right?
Well, look, I don't know of any person who can grow up in Neenah, Wisconsin, and look around and see what a middle-class town is like and not draw the conclusion that it's because we had good unions representing folks at the foundry and at the paper plants and other manufacturing jobs. That's what built the middle class and made a life for someone like me possible.
And yet, you know, somehow the Bergstroms and the Sensenbrenners did all right, didn't they? Right?
Yeah, it turns out they still made obscene amounts of money and held on to it generation after generation. But for working people actually getting a decent living.
So, this deal. What's the sleight of hand on the wages? You know, the first number I heard was an average of $53,000 a year for these jobs.
Oh, that may very well be true. Who knows? But first of all, it's not in writing. And if you don't write it down, it doesn't exist. If you don't make your commitments binding, there's no accountability and there's no certainty that they're going to happen. Put it in writing, Foxconn. Put it in writing, Governor Walker. Let's make a real deal here. Second of all,
but is that the metric? Is the average wage the metric you want to look at?
Oh, absolutely not. Because when you're examining Foxconn and where this might fit into their global operations, you need to say to yourself, hey, if this is their first plant truly coming together, production facility, not just assembly, outside of Asia, you got to expect that they're going to put the North American headquarters here. You got to expect that for a large production facility like this, there's going to be a wealth of plant executives. And you may have noticed, Sly, and I think your listeners probably recognize that corporate executive pay has skyrocketed in the last generation. The ratio between working people and the executives in the companies that employ them has gone way out of whack. So we're talking about an average here that's going to be skewed by the small number of people on the upper end and is going to push down further the wages of regular, ordinary, workaday, lunch pail Jane and Joe. So I think that looking at the average is foolish on a number of different levels. The only question is whether those who have some say over this are going to actually take up what might be a better approach.
Who are the warriors in the legislature for the potential workers of Foxconn right now?
Well, I mean, look, there's a number of good, solid people elected to office who are working on this in their own approach. It'd be hard for me to single out any people for want or for fear of
Dale Cuinga?
Dale Cuinga. We have not been in conversation about this. I don't think that we're going to.
Bob Gannon?
Bob Gannon. We've been playing phone tag, let's say.
Dewey Strobel?
Dewey Strobel's a fighting champion for the working class. Why? Everybody knows that. Come on. No, let me say at least a few people's names. But again, I want to say that a number of members of the legislature, of the Democrats at least, have been really interested in figuring out what can be done about this to say that before this deal goes any further, we need a guarantee that there'll be good union jobs at Foxconn, from the direct employees to the contractors to the suppliers. Representative Sinicki has put out, Chris Sinicki from the south side of Milwaukee, has put forward an amendment, two amendments actually, that could, if adopted, ensure that this deal creates good family-supporting jobs. It's a pretty simple yes vote on both of these for anyone in the legislature. If you're serious about saying, let's put $3 billion into a so-called economic development deal and expect good jobs to come out of it. Her first amendment that she put forward would set a minimum wage, just a bare minimum at the floor, of $15 per hour. Now, Foxconn and Governor Walker have claimed things like, as you noted, an average of $53,000 a year, some tax credit triggers over the equivalent of about $30,000 per year. Why not say that no one's going to make less than 15 and just say, that's the wage floor. We're putting it in writing. We're guaranteeing it. The other aspect of Representative Sinicki's First Amendment would create a mechanism to ensure a free and fair process for workers. And again, this is at the Foxconn plant, at the suppliers, and among service contractors at the plant and in this enterprise zone. It's going to create a free and fair process for them to organize a union. And I don't want to gloss over this here, Sly, because I think your listeners know as well as you and I do that we built a middle class in this country on union jobs. When unions started to be decimated, that's when our middle class started eroding. This is pretty simple here. We need to have unions, not just things like minimum wage laws, if we're going to raise standards to the level that not only lifts working people up above the poverty line, but lifts them to a middle class.
And by the way, if you don't believe Peter Rickman, I should post this up on Sly's office. Michael Rosen wrote a piece about what happened in Milwaukee with wages and factory jobs that is... It goes way back before and after. It goes into the 70s with these companies coming in and busting unions and moving factories out of Milwaukee. It was a long, ugly process.
The 1974 meat cutter strike. I know Dr. Rosen's piece well. And, plenty of economists, not even folks who are in the tank lefties, plenty of economists note that, look, worker bargaining power has declined. Worker wages and our share of the economic growth that we generate, the wealth that we create, has declined as well. And that has tracked uniformly with the decline in the numbers and the union and the density of workers represented by unions. This is not rocket science. You don't need a PhD, but thankfully there are plenty of PhD economists like Dr. Rosen who've looked at this and say, yeah, you don't have to love unions. You just have to recognize that they've played a tremendously valuable role in building a good middle-class economy and their decline has contributed to the erosion of that.
You know, it's really funny. If you listen to people like that, some of the prognosticators on the economy that come on WBBM in Chicago on their business hour or go on some of the TV networks, they're literally perplexed that the job market, you know, is tightening for employers. They're having a tougher time finding employees, and the unemployment is low, but wages aren't going up, and they don't understand why.
It's kind of laughable, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
It's, you know, when working people don't have power on the whole, we're not going to bargain wages up. Markets aren't perfect. That's the thing here. But when markets are rigged against working people, they're definitely not going to work. And if you believe that a market economy should deliver on living wages and good living standards for workers, I have some questions about that myself. If it's not doing that, you got to wonder why. And the reality here is the system's been rigged. It's been rigged by the boss class. It's been rigged by the 1%. It's been rigged by the politicians doing their bidding to put more power in the hands of corporate interests and take power away from working people. That's why it's so damn hard to form a union these days. You got to go through every last hoop. Just look at Nissan, the Nissan plant where the auto
workers
are.
You read my mind.
Yeah, yeah. Nissan can wantonly break the law, which they did. Everybody knows it. I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on anyone in the legal profession here, but there's a whole set of union busters, these law firms that help. It's called the union avoidance industry. They will go and counsel companies facing an organizing drive, go break the law. Yeah, yeah, do it. Go break the law. Why? Because the penalties are so slight. If a worker risks their job to help form a union, undergoing and facing threats and coercion and intimidation, if a worker says, I'm for the union, and they're fired illegally, the law says you can't do that. If they're fired illegally, they basically have no recourse under the law. They may get reinstated later on after years. I mean, I could go on about all these examples.
Well, how about that plant employing all those temporary workers? They call them temporary. They're like permanent temporary workers where they give them no benefits.
Oh, this is a fairly common practice in manufacturing and service industry work.
What would prevent Foxconn from doing that?
I don't want to be untruthful here and say, you know, nothing. They could get away with it. I think under the text of the legislation, they would have to be able to claim the full amounts of the refundable income tax credits, you know, about $1.5 billion, they would have to employ these folks and meet a certain total payroll amount for that. Again, we're talking averages.
I'd read that print down real carefully.
Yeah. But I think you're pointing to something here, Sly, which is that contemporary business practices are alone advantaging corporate interests and sticking it to workers. And we're not going to fix that one employer at a time. But we have to make sure that every opportunity we have to raise the standards and raise the floor, we do that. Now, I'd like to point here to an example of what can be done and how things can be done the right way. And this relates to Representative Tanicki's second amendment that she's putting forward on this bill, and that's to require a Foxconn that they negotiate a good jobs agreement substantially similar to that of what the Milwaukee Bucks did around the new arena and surrounding development. You know, for a project 1/12 the size in terms of overall public investment of this Foxconn thing, the Milwaukee Bucks said, you know what, for the arena and the areas around this, yeah, we're willing to put our commitments in writing, and we're going to sign a binding, accountable contract that says, yeah, 15 is a wage floor that we need to have. We need to have that sort of thing in place if we're going to transform a city like Milwaukee with a good jobs crisis. By the way, ain't that different in Racine and Kenosha. The Milwaukee Bucks said, yeah, we think that workers should have a union to be able to negotiate collectively. We're willing to give up a little power to make that part of how we do business, because that's just the right thing to do. Now, I want to say that some of our political leaders helped make that happen, and the Milwaukee Bucks ownership management team helped make that happen. But they said, you know what? We need to get more. We need to get more employers covered by this sort of thing so that this doesn't disadvantage us. And I'll say, you know, if one firm has to do 15 in a union in a given place, but their competitors don't, yeah, it might disadvantage them in the market. That's why we have to set standards for everyone. And that's why the Bucks deal worked, because it was going to cover everyone in an era, in an area, a geographic area, and not just one employer. With Foxconn, that's why it needs to cover the whole enterprise zone, including the suppliers. And the truth is, they're such a behemoth that they're a market leader.
And the other end of this is that the governor and his low-wage minions attack the people that attack wages, have gone after project labor agreements. So in other words, we obviously want this facility built with union labor as well.
From the first shovel in the ground to the first and last die made, every shovel in the foundry, and beyond that, every spatula of food in the kitchen that's going to have to serve this massive facility. Every wheel that's turned on the bus from the secure parking lot to the plant gates by a bus operator, that's got to be done union, because we need to make sure that this project on the whole creates the wealth of good family-supporting jobs that its proponents talk about. Well, you make good jobs into real family-supporting jobs with union jobs, and that's not just going to be in the factory. It's going to be from the folks who build every part of this development. It's going to be in the factory. It's going to be with the suppliers. People have talked about Corning, the glass manufacturer, locating in southeast Wisconsin now to pair with this plant. And it's going to be with the service contractors that make it possible to run this. You know, this is a secure facility they're talking about, Sly. There's going to be a lot of security guards, transport workers. There's going to be on-site food service. There's going to be janitors that clean this place. We need to make sure that every single one of those jobs is a good union job.
And finally, if this sort of legislation doesn't pass, the taxpayers could take a huge hit, right? As well as if you subsidize Foxconn, right, without these assurances, you don't get the boost in the economy. It almost becomes a double whammy, doesn't it? Because the workers there that are being underpaid are going to have to rely on government help.
And that government help is going to be a heck of a lot harder to come by, and it's going to be a heck of a lot more difficult to build a robust, middle-class, good jobs economy, because we'll have sunk $3 billion of otherwise flexible resources into this project. You know, that's money that could be spent on things like investing in our university system and our K-12 schools. It could be invested in healthcare. This sort of investment is putting all of our eggs in one basket. That's why we need to make absolutely certain that before this goes any further, there are standards put in place to require that good union jobs come out of it. You know, we're not out here saying this is the worst boondoggle that's ever been put forward. I mean, this is low-wage Walkers, Wisconsin. We've seen some real doozies here. We're saying that before this thing goes any further, we need to ensure in writing that there's a requirement for good union jobs to come out of this. If these promises and assertions are any reality, have any reality to them, Foxconn and Walker are going to put it in writing to guarantee 15 in the union. It's a pretty simple vote that legislators have to take this coming Thursday. So we'd like to see them make that vote happen, and we'd like to see Foxconn come to the table to sit down and negotiate a good jobs agreement like the Bucks did before them. It's good enough for the Bucks. It's good enough for Foxconn.
Call your legislator. Peter Rickman for the Alliance for Good Jobs. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Sly. Take care, brother.
Slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
For more wisdom like that, drive home with Sly on the Big AM 1380 and the Big FM 93.7.
You like that?